Hi, this is Michael Dorn, Lieutenant Commander Worf from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Tea, Earl Grey, hot.
It's time for another serving of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated TNG show. I'm Daniel Prue, sitting in the center chair this week, and joining me as always are my two wonderful co-hosts. I'm joined by newly bearded Philip Gilfus. Philip, when you stroke your beard thusly, do you get some enjoyment out of that, or what's that about?
Well, first, you will now have to call me Commander Redbeard. I feel like I've earned it. You know, I just think I needed something a little bit more Viking around here.
Yeah.
You know, it's toughen us up, right? You know, people think the Enterprise D, we got carpeting and holodecks, we're just the pushovers. But hey, we can mess your stuff up. And so that's why Commander Redbeard's here, to make sure that no one messes with us.
Commander Redbeard, we might have to keep that in our back pocket for now. But and also joining us is newly minted Chief Medical Officer Darren Moser. Darren, you've got some big shoes to fill. I believe they are tap dancing shoes of some sort.
It's a coat to fill. It's,
coat,
but
yes,
it's, you know, yes. Surprisingly, it's one size fits all.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah.
Also, you have a child now.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought this was our communal child that we all, you know, raised together.
It takes a starship. It does. Okay. Well. People probably can't tell, but we're actually talking season two. They might be able to tell that, but what we're doing is we're revisiting our TNG Essentials Trek here. We did season one a few weeks back, and we're back now. We're going to talk the shortest season in TNG, so this is going to be the shortest episode, I guarantee it.
So would you call it too short a season?
Well, we'll find out. We'll find out. So just to go over a little bit of the ground rules here, how we established them before, as far as I can remember, and maybe we'll make up some new ones as we go along. But basically, if you've listened to the Standard Orbit 1.0, Mike and Drew, who came up with the idea, and it's since been kind of used from all the other shows, a lot of the other shows since, basically we take a season and we go through it episode by episode, and we decide whether the episode is essential, quote-unquote essential, whatever that means, however we define it, or not. And if not, we throw it out, and we leave the good stuff in, and we see what we're left over with at the end. It's just kind of a fun exercise, to a different way to look through all of our favorite episodes that we've watched a bazillion trillion times. So, how do we define essential, guys? I think, it either has to be superb quality, which I think a couple of the episodes, I think, may qualify for that, and or if it sets up something important in the future. And this doesn't necessarily have to be just TNG related. If this sets up something in Voyager, Deep Space Nine, or maybe even Enterprise, we might get into at some point. That's also, to me, essential. Any other caveats that you guys like to throw in there?
I mean, I just think the discussion of what is essential, it is a crucible of truth. And
we burn away what is not necessary until we are left with a pure through episode season.
Exactly. It's like the measure of a episode.
Yes, yeah, there you go. One of the benefits, too, of doing it with a three-person panel is hopefully we don't have any reason to have a tiebreaker.
Right. Why would we ever need to break a tiebreaker?
Which is ironic, because our season one episode is titled Essential Coin Flips, episode 140.
I mean, when people think Earl Grey, do they think ties? I mean, why would they think that?
In theory, I hope they don't. But
don't be such a child, Daniel.
Oh, here
of course.
We go. Here we go. Okay, we're gonna stop that for now, because we've got a lot to talk about, even though it is a shorter season. And you know,
also, are we going to have clips of us talking about this?
Only at the end.
Only at the very end. Yeah. You know, short. It's the shortest season, but it'll be interesting. The first two seasons not super well regarded. So
is it too short a season, Daniel?
Oh, we already did that joke. So yeah, let's start.
That is outrageous.
Let's start and see where we can go. So to start with a ball of light, how's that? We will go with the child, which I will read a short synopsis of. Counselor Troy is shocked to find out she is pregnant. Really, that's it. That's the most important bit.
But Daniel, who's the father?
I think we found out that Darren's the father, right? No. So what do you guys think? Darren, Philip, jump in here, because I don't want to start this one. Like, I
don't know. I think that, I mean, this kicks off the season, and it's not just a one-off. I mean, you could say, but, like, it establishes the season. It introduces Pulaski. It introduces Guinan. It introduces Tin Ford. It introduces that LaForge is chief engineer. I mean, this kind of sets the table. So, I mean, I feel like it really does. Like, you may not like the story, which is, like, the whole episode.
Because I really don't like the story.
But so. All the set pieces are, like, you know, you're gonna be a little lost going from a neutral zone to where silence has lease.
It's, yeah.
Mm. See, for me, I'm trying to... I am using our criteria, but I have kind of a new criteria I'm also putting in place. I listened to the Nerd Nuptial, which is co-hosted by Tristan Riddell from To the Journey and his wife, the girl, and she's actually agreed to start watching TNG. And he just started right off on season one, and now he's kind of regretting that decision. And he's said that he wants to pick, quote unquote, the best bits. And I'm like, oh, well, we've already covered the best bits of season one. Thank you very much. So now it is up to us to make sure a newcomer to TNG season two is getting the best. And, oh, the child, it's it's really hard for me to take that. I mean, because every point you said was right, Philip. I mean, it does establish Geordi as... You know, I mean, you could figure it out by the fact that he's engineering everything in the next episode. We see 10 forward. We are introduced to the CMO. But why does it have to have that A plot? Oh, I am torn because I really hate this plot. But so can we work around it? I'm tossing that out there.
Can we edit the episode? You know,
so we get a 5-minute episode of, you know, of just the basically Pulaski coming on the ship and stuff.
And
exactly.
And
Guinan. Oh, there you go. Just pretty much commercial breaks is all we
need. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Okay. So this actually blew up in the Babel conference when From There to Here covered the child. And I don't think we're interested in going down that path of conversation here in this Essentials thing. I agree. It is not a great story. It's a terrible story. It's not great. But from how we've established the rules, I kind of have to agree with Philip that we kind of have to keep it, because it's not like it just introduces one thing. It kind of sets the tone for the whole, you know, for the entire season, and it establishes a lot. All the differences between season one and season two are present here, and it's kind of hard to just be like, oh, well, you'll just figure it out in the next episode. Well, you're not going to figure out who Guinan and the new chief medical officer is, and that Geordi changed jobs, you know, and all of this other stuff. So, I guess we'll have to keep it.
Yeah, if it didn't have so many setups in it. But, okay, I will begrudgingly give you this one.
You don't have to, Darren. You can. This is going to be like the Supreme Court. You can vote no, knowing that Daniel's voting yes and I'm voting yes.
Okay, I'll vote no. What do you vote, Daniel?
Yeah, I'm going to have to say, just because it does establish a lot of, especially this season, of this season's TNG. So by definition, it's essential. It's showing stuff you need to know and stuff you need to see. And then if you want to forget 90% of it, go ahead. That's fine. I don't think anybody's going to hold that against you.
Remember.
So
remember me.
Let's move on now to something maybe a little less controversial. We'll talk where silence has lease. When an alien traps the Enterprise and threat to kill half the crew purely out of curiosity, Captain Picard is faced with a grim decision. This is Nagilum, fellas. And do we want to go frog face, giant frog face on the Essentials collection?
Guys, I have two words for why we keep this. Two bridges?
Okay, we do reference two bridges a lot, but...
Wait. Oh, I would love if that is also an essential part of TNG, if Earl Grey essentially has a running joke that no longer makes sense.
No, that's actually going to be featured in our upcoming series, Earl Grey Essentials, and right. Yeah, we'll get into
that. So after we get through seven seasons, it'll be Earl Grey. Wait, isn't that the exact same thing, basically?
Oh no! Oh no! Because McDuff is super essential, but we don't need him over. That's a future show. I don't know. It's not a bad episode by any stretch. And we get to see some let's blow up the ship moments. I don't know. There's nothing in here though. I don't think of consequence that really happens, right?
Well, yeah.
I do like the fundamental nature. Like it's fundamental. Well, I'll modify it this way. It's fundamental early TNG. Like, I think it right. captures what the series is about. You know, you have the mystery, you have an alien, you have trying to figure out how to deal with the alien, and then Picard having to come up with a way, which, I mean, really, he kind of just talks the alien of, like, yeah, I guess, you know. Like, well, yeah, we'll blow you up, or we're just going to blow ourselves up. I mean, basically sort of the Janeway all over again.
Yeah, it's a very TOS episode, right? I mean, in a lot of ways, that kind of conceit of...
Well, it's just like that Voyager episode, Scientific Method.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, no,
hey, TTJ, if you're listening, who did it better? Where Silence Has Lease or Scientific Method?
Yeah, there's nothing in here. Nothing in here.
I don't think... I think we can do without this one.
So, Dan, you're getting rid of the meme... of the guy at Con dying.
Shaking his head. Oh, that is
so many things realize that you're losing with this episode. I mean, if you're fine with that, I'm voting yes, but if y'all just want to throw all these things under the thing and we can never say two bridges again after that.
No, that's not how this works.
This is not how this works.
This is just an arbitrary
list. Essentially how this works.
This is an arbitrary list. So Darren and I say no. Let's get rid of it. It's gone. We are now, fellas, 50% season 2. Can you believe it? All right. Let's see here. Let's move on to...
And it's Elementary, Daniel.
Yes, of course. Elementary, dear Data. The Enterprise is threatened when a character in Data and LaForge's holodeck simulation becomes sentient.
I mean, do we even
need to talk about this one except for how great it is?
You have the first cosplay. It introduces the whole, Moriarty, because it's going to be really confusing in about 3-4 seasons here who this guy is.
That is true. Yeah, we can't if we don't keep this one, we cannot use...
Ship in a bottle.
Like, we literally cannot, because it would be so confusing. But, yeah. I definitely think, unless you have something about Moriarty, like, you know, he doesn't do it for you like Mark Twain doesn't. If you really hate this character, just let me know. But
I love Moriarty. I wish he came back more. I wish he came back on Voyager. I wish he showed up all over the place. He was awesome.
That would be like the most weird connection point. And well, somehow
the Enterprise
Voyager.
D exploded in Viridian 3. There was this wormhole that the cube went through.
Okay, I can get him on Voyager while Barclay is working on the Pathfinder project. He has that holographic Voyager, but he's at the station, and that's where they have the module, and so he actually is part of the program as well, and he helps him out.
Barclay is the one that ends up with the module, isn't it? Or do they? No, they send it away.
It goes to Jupiter Station, which I'm pretty sure is where the Pathfinder project's being done from.
Well, so the reason I just threw that out there is because Moriarty is the Doctor before the Doctor is the Doctor, and so
yes.
I would love to see those two characters interact. I think that would be really cool. Like, if those two characters and Vic Fontaine, like, met at, like, you know, HoloCon or something, it would be really awesome.
Oh, God. I want to go to
HoloCon. And they act out Photons Be Free.
Oh, you know, that would be really cool. And they all
have... And they serve Bud Light.
Now I want to see a bunch of people cosplaying all of the holograms at Star Trek Las Vegas, and they're holding a pad that says "Photons Be Free," and they're having a book club.
But like you know, everyone does like the cheap one where they just come like in t-shirt and jeans, and they just put like a hollow emitter on their shoulder, and like, "See, I'm a hologram."
Oh, that's what I was gonna do, Philip. Oh, not anymore. Yeah, hey, I'll do that if Daniel does his, you know, Lieutenant J haircut.
So the Y.
Do it. So yeah, yes, no, for Data, obviously. Yeah,
this episode, I mean, this by all of our criteria is super important, right? I mean, it is a really important episode. It establishes a lot. We see it later on, of course, Moriarty, as we've mentioned, the Data Sherlock thing, and it's a fantastic episode to boot. You know, if you care about the self-contained season 2 storyline, we get to see Pulaski being a real big jerk to Data. So, you know, there's that,
that
too.
That is true.
Fraud!
And I have a feeling maybe that'll come up, you know, maybe in an episode or two. So, yeah.
Guys, I feel really old. This aired in December 5th, 1988.
All right, fellas, let's move on. We bumped it up to 75. So, the outrageous Akona. The Enterprise crew rescue a, and by the way, this is in quotes on Memory Alpha, quote-unquote, roguish freighter captain, whose ship is malfunctioning, but his presence drags them into an interplanetary feud.
So now we need to make a trailer cut with the audio from the Rogue One trailer, but only using footage from the outrageous Akona.
Oh, geez. That would be interesting. Space vests? Anything?
Prototype Riker is kind of.
Say goodnight, sorta. Data.
Good night, Data.
Oh, Data trying to be funny. That's
yes.
Not.
This is essential. You want Data as comedian. I mean, no, doing the Jerry Lewis, a Joe Piscopo. What more do you not want in TNG, my friends? What
see,
more
we just go from
want?
A great
Terry
hologram
Hatcher?
Episode to this.
No.
I can't even.
No. Yeah. Even Philip says no, huh? All right, that's no. We don't even need to keep talking then. That's a no.
Oh, we're back to 50%.
That's right. Next up, loud as a whisper. The Enterprise brings a deaf negotiator to mediate the end of a planetary civil war. Now, this is interesting. I like Reva. And the story behind that actor being deaf and wanting to come on the show and coming on is really cool. And I like the chorus that he has. I don't know if I could count this as essential, though. I'm not really sure.
I mean, I would count it in.
Really, Philip? You would vote yes? That's surprising.
I would. I'm the William O. Douglas of this panel. I heard two people laugh at that joke in our audience. Basically, I mean, I don't think this is it's a dated episode. That's the kindest way I'll say it. It does seem very dated with the aliens, with some of the effects and everything. It looks very much of the time of 88. But the story, it is hard for me to be like, oh, you know, when you want to get rid of the whole, you know, episode where you have this deaf guest star playing a deaf person and the way that would work. And is it the ending a little hokey? Maybe. If those don't remember, he basically is going to, teach sign language to the two warring factions so they can understand him. And then in a process, since they're both learning the same thing, you know, they're in a common thing that they can work together. So, you know, a little bit hokey, I guess. But I don't know. It does pull on the spirit heartstrings for me a little bit, so.
Yeah, I definitely vote yes. I mean, in the essential way of what you guys were trying to say about Where Silence Has Lease, where this is a very Star Trek concept. The, you know, the putting aside our differences, the, you know, not to mention the real, like you said, the real life applications of, you know, it actually being a deaf actor instead of just someone pretending to be deaf. And it's an enjoyable episode. It's well acted. It has its message, but maybe it's a little heavy handed at the end, but not too bad. But it's very enjoyable.
The Geordi stuff too, you know, the whole message obviously about, you know, being disabled and what does that mean? And these people obviously have a lot to contribute, is very Star Trek as well. I'm split on this one. It is a very Star Trek concept at its core, but I don't know. I don't know if I can vote yes for it.
I vote yes.
Okay.
I vote yes.
I don't need to then. Yes. Perfect. So we are just bouncing back and forth. So let's see what we get with the Schizoid Man.
Call me Grandpa.
An away team discovers the dying doctor, Ira Graves, who claims to be Data's grandfather. Now,
those that knew him loved him, and those that loved him knew him. To know him was to love him, and is to this... love him was... Oh, sorry.
Is this Brent's first... Please, please, please let me act episode. I think this actually might be the first instance of that.
He's like, I just have this idea that if I play all my ancestors, I mean, I think I really have them all down. I think I could play my grandfather and my father. I feel like I could pull off a brother or two. We can negotiate.
Grandmother, that's just silly, but I will totally be in drag for a Western.
Yes.
That is okay.
Yeah.
Now I'll throw this out here. Dr. Salar.
Yeah, I know. You were going to say
throwing
that.
Throwing that out there.
Dr. Salar is to me, the most compelling argument that could be said about this episode. Otherwise,
to say it's essential. It's essential we go through all of this episode just for a shot of Dr. Salar.
I like it. I actually do like it. It's a good episode. It does have a TOS feel because you sort of have like the stereotypical, you know, young blonde lab assistant, and the older gentleman who has his eye on her, you know, they're like TOS-y, except like involving it with androids or something, which I know this involves androids too, so it's really not that much of a stretch. But I think, you know, you have a little Data origin, a little bit. I mean, not a lot, but I like it. Gives Brent a chance to act out a little bit. A little obvious, I think, you know, just, I think everyone should have known something was up right away. But I don't know. I'm voting yes, as always.
If Ira Graves ever came back in any of the subsequent stories about Soong or anything like that, maybe.
Like it actually tied together.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if they showed a younger version of him, I know the perfect person to cast. His last name is Shepherd.
Do they happen to name drop? I think in this episode they name drop the Daystrom Institute, if I'm remembering correctly. I'm just trying to grasp at straws here for continuity.
Yeah,
I say no.
I say no. It's not essential.
All right.
It may be an okay episode in Philip's eyes, but
not enough and to keep
from
it
now
the
on.
Block.
Anytime anyone mentions Dr. Salar, when I want to say who, with all
they, I don't think they ever mentioned Dr. Salar.
They always mention this. They'll be like, you know, Dr. Salar's patient, or you know, or da da da. So.
Well, moving on. Unnatural Selection. The Enterprise investigates the deaths of the crew of the USS Lantry, who all died of old age.
Yep. This is a weird episode. Like, I feel like I'd have to watch it again, because I feel like it's been a while since I rewatched it, that it just didn't make sense the last time I saw it. Like, you have, like, the frozen mannequin boy guy.
This is the one with old Pulaski, right?
Yes,
I mean, older Pulaski.
Yeah. It's kind of weird.
And where, like, she beams him onto the shuttle. I mean, that's a clever idea, but they never quarantine anyone ever like that ever again.
I do like that, and I like the fact that it's made clear that Data is obviously completely immune to this, and he's clear, and he can be there with her. And I also, there's obviously a little bit of a tie-in there with the eugenics stuff, talking about genetically modifying people. Again, this episode was enough to turn Diana Muldar off of ever doing science fiction again, because of the makeup she had to wear.
Wow, she's seven episodes in, so.
I think this is what convinced her that, you know, she wasn't going to stick around. But, yeah, no. The old people makeup.
I don't think so.
Nah. Yeah. Philip, are you gonna give this one officially a no as well?
I can't really get anything from it. Yeah.
No. Nope. Dropping it.
Okay, well, this next one, I mean, do we even have to?
This is the origin story of
Earl Grey.
Of Earl Grey here. So, a matter of honor.
I feel like if any of us... Oh, go ahead, do your summary.
A matter of honor. Riker serves as an exchange officer on a Klingon warship.
I mean, if any of us argue,
lots of bird of prey selfies.
Yeah, I think if any of us argue, then a fight might break out.
Or one of us will assassinate the other, I guess.
I was going to say, as my honorable second, you know, I have to kill Daniel, and then you have to kill me, so.
And if you don't like this episode, perhaps you'd like a weaker episode.
Oh, what and about I mean
both episodes.
This is a solid episode. I mean, we've talked a bit about this before, but it also establishes a crazy amount. This is the start.
Well, remember, it didn't. I forget. Didn't we get rid of, or is that our coin flip about the Klingon episode? This is introduces the Klingon. This to me, this is the real Klingon introduction.
We did not include Code of Honor.
Yeah.
Oh no, actually, that's not the one.
It's not Heart and Glory.
Heart of Glory.
Heart of Glory. We did include Heart of Glory.
Okay.
But it doesn't matter because this still really establishes. The Klingons. We get the. Obviously, the ship life. We also get the Benzite stuff, too, in here as well. And we get the phaser
with Mordon,
range.
Magdon, Mendon.
Mordon, Mendon.
They all look alike. I'm sorry.
We get Gach.
Yeah.
First time in this episode.
I mean, just that whole eating, you know, scene at 10 forward. Like, Pippius Claw.
Yeah.
So much good stuff.
Why would we not keep this? This is perfect.
There's no reason.
This is so good. This is so good. All right.
I know about this next one, guys.
The next one's a little sketchy. I'm already getting ready to press the no button.
Is it like the X Factor where we're like turn our chairs, our command chairs around? So we're facing the horseshoe and there's the big view screen behind us. That'd be a little cramped for our feet, but I think we could make it work.
The measure of a man. Picard must prove Data is legally a sentient being with rights and freedoms under Federation law when transfer orders demand Data's reassignment for study and disassembly.
Yeah, it's just, you have to watch this episode first. Like, put this in front of the child and watch it first into this entire season.
This is the essential of essentialness.
Yeah.
I mean, this is one of the best episodes of all of Star Trek, of TNG, of Star Trek. I mean, this episode
is Captain Essential, not like Ensign Essential.
Yeah, you know what? This episode is so important in establishing so much about Data, so much about the Federation, so much about all of this stuff. Plus, it's a great character study between Riker and Picard. There's nothing bad in this episode.
And if we don't include it, I mean, we can't use Data's day. I mean, it's literally. I mean,
who's
Data's day
to?
Hinges.
Apparently, this is the first time the poker game was shown. Measure of a Man.
Also very important, right? Yeah, yeah. We don't need to talk.
It's only the final shot of
Philippa,
all of TNG.
Someone has to talk about Picard's ass. We need an episode where that happened.
He's a damn sexy man.
So, well, that we don't really have to spend too much time on it. Obviously, we're going to say yes. Obviously, it's good. And we've talked about it a zillion times before, so... Not much new to say there, but let's move on to the Dauphin. Wesley falls in love with the new leader of a war-torn planet.
Is anyone a little disappointed this doesn't have cetacean ops in it? Because that's totally where I thought it was going, but no.
That's the Dauphin. Oh,
Commander Flipper, so close. Yeah, this is kind of forgettable.
I mean, it is what it is. It is, you know, Wesley's
It is what it is.
First love, you know, and I don't know how great of an episode you can ever make a teen, you know, because we're old and we don't care anymore. But at the time, I'm
well,
sure.
But hey, so is the game, and the game is way better than this episode. No, the game is way better than this episode.
I think this episode has better special effects than the game.
No, I don't remember. Oh, I don't know. Who cares, really, at that It's also got What's-Her-Face, so it's definitely still better.
To listeners, I don't mean to be shallow, but like, if you're going to make me pick between those two, that's a hard pick. I'm just going to throw that out there.
And
I say pass on Dolphin.
I'm saying keep it, but I'll be outvoted.
Yeah, I mean, the effect, and you were wrong, because in the Dauphin, when she changes from teenage girl, or no, the old lady, it was the old lady, from old lady into giant teddy bear monster, it is the it's the cheesiest effect on Star Trek. Like,
it's a morph effect. The game?
No, it's cheesier than that. It might even be cheesier than anything on TOS. I think it is that cheesy. It's so bad.
I'd rather she walk behind the bulkhead and come out the other side, like, already changed. It's the most obvious character swap.
Sorry, Philip. We're getting rid of it. It's not, I wouldn't even say it's, like, a terrible episode, but there isn't a lot in it to keep.
It's not essential.
Yeah, certainly
not. By any stretch. So.
All right, then. Let's move on to Contagion. The Enterprise and a Romulan warbird are attacked by the same computer virus that has already destroyed one Federation starship of the same class as the Enterprise. And that would be, gentlemen...
Yamamoto.
The Yamato. So what do we think? Do we want to keep it?
Now, what's the episode of Deep Space Nine that we'll have to cancel if we get rid of the Iconians?
And that's why we're keeping it.
Or all of Star Trek Online.
Online. We have to keep it, right?
And you get an awesome Romulan commander.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And we get the sister ship of the flagship, which is cool and important.
Well, we also saw that in The Silence Has Lead. So this is actually.
But that wasn't really it.
I know.
But yeah. Although it fared better. Hey, guys, we are halfway through the season already.
Huzzah! Yeah, so are we all agreed? We're all keeping this, right?
Yeah.
And I like the ending. I like the ending when Picard, he's on the Romulan ship, and then I think that was clever, and then they get back on the Enterprise.
We have to take a moment. This episode is the first time we get, by, you know, the exact wordage of T. Earl Grey.
There we go. And when they're in the transporter gateway room, I definitely get I'm blanking on the video game now. What was the name of the video game we played? The Shift game?
Oh, yeah.
No, that's what I called it.
I don't remember the name of it, but yeah.
It was the Days Ends of Futures Past.
Yeah, yeah, Futures, like Future Past, Future Tense.
Days something. Of Star Trek Timelines, yeah. Remembered.
But I definitely, like, in that room, I got the same vibe as that scene with the gateways. Like, I got to walk from one end to the other end, and it got to move really slowly.
Yes, well, we're gonna keep it. I think we're all in agreement on that one. The next one may be a little more contentious. I'm not sure how we're going to... I know where I'm landing on it, but... we're going to talk about the Royale.
Guys, I'm just going to say we're about to start a spree here. It's going to be very uncomfortable.
Do you guys know what they call this episode in London? They call it the Royale.
The Royale. The Royale with cheese. The USS Enterprise investigates the wreckage of a 21st century... Earth spaceship orbiting a distant planet and the appearance of a casino with inhabitants based on a rather poorly written paperback novel. Now, every time I watch this episode, I look it up to see if this is a real novel or not. Every single time, even though I seem to forget it. But it doesn't matter, because this episode's terrible.
Yep, it's terrible. Done. I think we can move on.
What? Baby needs a new pair of shoes?
Oh, there's a couple of
lines. Get rid of that?
No, it is so weird.
It's just surreal. Just think of it as a holodeck episode where they can't get out. It's basically the same premise, except for it's on an alien planet.
Nope.
Oh, this is a David Lynch TNG episode. I mean, it just, you got the revolving door in the middle of nowhere, and then you got the craziness of the, like, dime store story, and then Data,
I mean, Data
crunching.
In that 10-gallon hat, you're going to deny people Data in that hat?
Don't worry. It'll come back. Well, maybe
right,
perhaps
okay.
We'll see Data in a cowboy hat.
Maybe not essential, but still fun.
Okay, regardless of its quality, because that actually kind of doesn't matter as much, there is nothing in here to keep. There's nothing that comes back up. There's nothing of consequence that happens in this episode. They're on this planet. They find this weird thing. This weird thing happens, and then it ends. So I don't. There's not much going on here. I think that's a no. I think we're firmly in the no. Next up is actually, I believe, Philip's favorite episode in all of Star Trek. So, Time Squared. The Enterprise discovers a duplicate of Picard from 6 hours in the future. Go ahead, Philip.
That's literally all you can say, isn't it? I dare you to say something else about this episode.
They get caught in a time loop?
That's not a time loop.
Is there actually a time loop?
No.
Not really.
That's it. That is literally, like, it's blah. I mean,
and this is the one where Data has the canister he's got to put in the thing, right?
No. None of that.
It's
there's
just
nothing
to Picard.
This is the one where Picard shoots himself.
What? Sorry, I can't make that joke anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, Picard shoots himself in this episode and kills himself.
Well, he does that in Tapestry, too, but... with a little more flair.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't really think there's anything going on in here.
Okay.
No, literally nothing happens in this episode. You could go to sleep to this episode.
It is very
happens.
It is very boring.
It's very slow. Yeah, no, I'm not going to argue it.
It's time slowed squared. All
right. It's a no. You can skip time squared officially. All right, it's taking. Okay, next up, the Icarus Factor. When Commander Riker is offered command of the starship Ares, his estranged father, Kyle Riker, is sent by Starfleet to brief him on the mission. Meanwhile, Data, LaForge, Pulaski, Wesley, and O'Brien help Worf celebrate the anniversary of his rite of ascension.
Yeah. Oh, we get pain sticks.
Pain sticks. Pretty important.
And Q-tips.
We get Kyle Riker.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is. I mean, it gives a lot of Riker backstory. Like, if you don't like Kyle Riker or don't like the Pulaski and Riker, and I don't know why you. And even if you don't like Ambujitsu, I don't know who you are, and I don't want to talk to you. But even all that, you still get the backstory of Riker's mom, and you know how he grew up, and it's very. I mean, it's very interesting. I think. You know, do they always do a lot of follow up? Probably not. Though they do discuss it in with his double.
Thomas.
Second Riker. Chances.
Second
chances.
Beardy McVelcros. You know.
This is a.
And, you mean Sideburns also, McGee?
Yeah, and then you also get with the Ares, you get sort of the, I don't want to say trope, but you can call it that Riker won't sit down. You know, this starts here. This is the first command we have officially offered to Commander Riker.
And I don't think, you know, we can just as easily write off the whole Worf thing either. I mean, this is a character study for both of these people. And that whole thing with his birthday and the Klingon culture, that kind of informs a lot about his character as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not my favorite episode by any stretch of the imagination, but, and of course, we would be remiss. Philip alluded to it earlier, but we have to at least say it out loud. Thanks to Andy at Women of Warp, you know, this is the episode where we learn that Pulaski banged Riker's dad. So I guess we have to keep it for that at least, right?
And Daniel, we have to keep it for you because Pulaski reveals 24th century truth and mores about relationships that she's been divorced five times. Am I remembering that correctly?
It's quite a bit. It's quite a few times, yeah.
And friends with every one of them.
Absolutely. Yes, very healthy relationships at this point, too. Which we'll get into later on. But next up,
Daniel.
Ben Pals.
Philip.
Data makes contact with a young girl from a pre-warp civilization on a planet facing imminent annihilation. Guys, this is interesting. Very Prime Directive heavy.
It is very Prime Directive-y.
Now, let's all just discuss it here in this comfortable setting.
Philip, is someone out there? What do we think?
I'm a little torn on this.
You must choose me.
I don't think it's great. I mean, you know, the episode's interesting, and
that's true.
To me, it is almost worth keeping for just the conversation scene. The scene in his quarters, where you get the whole crew candidly talking about what the Prime Directive is and what it means.
Much better than the room where they're sitting around in the child. All discussing what should happen. Yeah.
And it's a great scene because it feels real. It feels comfortable. It feels like a group of colleagues having a conversation about ideology. And it's the closest we get to understanding what the Prime Directive exactly is. And I don't know if that's enough to save it, but I could be swayed that way.
No, I think it is.
I think it's worth keeping.
Yeah, making up the concept of early TNG essentialness. There's going to be a dichotomy, a delineation. I vote yes to keep them. Yeah. I feel like
they're not all going to be amazing episodes, but for being essential, I think it says a lot about the Star Trek world and about Data.
And we get the Pulaski memory wipe technique that will come up once or twice after this.
That's true.
And then never again.
Next up, Q-Who! Riker is granted the power of the Q. Oh, wait, no, sorry, that's not that. Q throws the Enterprise into uncharted space where it encounters
Robin Hood.
Engaged by a vessel of a previously unknown species, the Bull.
Robin Hood in a comet.
I mean, look, this is just a one-off. We don't ever see him again. I mean, why do we even need to waste our time? They're all just black pajama people.
Black pajama
get it together, Star
people.
Trek.
Yeah, I mean, what do we say here? This is both a Q and a Borg episode. This is the Borg Genesis episode. Sonya Gomez, hot chocolate. I mean, come on, this episode has it all.
You have to keep Q Who.
Yeah. I mean, what is best of both worlds without Q Who?
Yeah, the only other is and because Best of Both Worlds is the next Borg episode, right?
It is.
So you can't just start with Best of Both Worlds, which I'm just going to cut out a limb that we're going to keep.
Yeah, we might keep that one.
Yeah, but which part, Darren? Which part?
Well, one has the ending to our episode, and the other one, solves it. But
this is also, a Guinan pretty heavy episode as well. The Guinan Q, although we never really get any resolution to that, but it is still an interesting aspect.
We get cat hands, cat claws.
Yeah, we do get Guinan backstory that the Borg destroyed or decimated.
Which may or may not come up in a movie.
They keep her backstory vaguely, which is nice.
So this is another one of those no-brainers, another one of those, you don't get rid of it. You can't get rid of it. It would TNG as a whole wouldn't make sense without
it. Season 2 would collapse.
Yeah. we're keeping it. We are keeping it. So, next up, Samaritan Snare. Picard must undergo a serious medical procedure while the Enterprise D deals with the pack lens.
This is where I'm going to bring up my splicing essential episode. I think it is essential to Picard Wesley. I think you got it. That's a keeper. For one thing, it just sets up Tapestry. Spoiler alert. Yeah. The other thing with the pack lens, we can forget it. So I want to.
I don't think the
packlets
are that bad, but I'd say
for
the episode.
They are. No, and it's not. If I've never talked about this episode, I don't know. I'm sure I have. It's not that I think the packlets are bad. I think it's insulting.
Yeah.
Like I feel sorry for them. I mean, I do. Yeah. I feel like why are we're like making fun of them and they're. I mean, they. You know, I don't want to be.
You don't have to. Everybody that's ever seen that episode knows exactly what that is and. Yeah, no, I agree. The packlets are borderline way too far. But everything else in this episode is gold. I mean, the Pulaski Picard / Picard Wesley stuff is really, really good. We get essential Picard history with the heart and the Domjot and all that stuff. We get the deadly Crimson Force Field, which comes up again. So. Ever, never, never, ever. But no, I agree. This is the character stuff is too good to leave behind. So,
and would you like one of these sandwiches, Daniel?
So it's a yes for me.
Yep. Yes. I say yes.
Yep.
And I think that's where the season ends. So
no, we still got five more to choose.
Up the long ladder, the Enterprise discovers two threatened colonies which must cooperate to survive. Yes, absolutely yes. We're keeping this one. Okay, next up. No, I'm
wait,
kidding.
Whoa, wow. I didn't know this had this
no,
worked.
Okay. No.
Irish farming colony and clones.
This is
stereotypical Irish farming colony.
Yes, Captain Redbeard.
This is the Phantom Menace to Voyager's
drawing a line right there, aren't you, Dan?
This is the Phantom Menace to Voyager's Fairhaven, is what this is. So,
wait. So then, what movie would Fairhaven be?
That's a good question. Actually, no. I guess this would actually be Attack of the Clones too. But anyways, we're getting way too. I have a crush on this woman, so I'm biased towards this episode, but even I will say, no, we have to, I mean, the cloning stuff is kind of interesting.
That's true, and the use of twins and stuff for the effects was really well done.
And the whole, like, reaction to that Riker and Pulaski have.
Oh, yes.
To their being cloned without their
consent.
That's a really interesting kind of subplot.
It is. I mean, really, what makes this hard for me to take, because actually I think you can probably say, if you were like trying to rewrite or edit, you could probably keep about 75% of this. But just the outlandishness of they're not even supposed to be Irish, but that's obviously what they are. It was just so exaggerated and like, he's drinking and then, oh, here comes the lady. Ugh. Ladies, am I right? Always ladies always be yelling at you. And And then the ending, oh my god, the solution, I can't take that. Imperialism at its best, like, oh, your Irish fell into my clones. Your clones fell into my Irish. You know, it's like, you can't just, like, tell people, oh yeah, problem solved, we're just going to marry you to five of them. All right, but don't I have a say? No talk.
Sorry, the episode's over. Can't talk about it.
You know, actually, the strongest part of this that I would slightly be convinced to keep it is the Pulaski Worf storyline, which is interesting, and it's a good character study between those two. Unfortunately, we don't get
any
payoff.
Is this the tea ceremony?
Yeah, this is the tea ceremony one.
Yeah,
yep,
tea ceremony.
It yep, is, it is the there. Tea ceremony one. So that's cool. I like that. It's cool. We don't get a lot of good, cool Pulaski stuff, and her and Worf is a really interesting team up that would definitely have been interesting to see kind of grow. Unfortunately, we don't get to see that, so I don't know if it's really essential.
Yeah, so I'm going to take it back around to essentialness. Merits of good acting, good concepts. Is it essential to all of TNG?
Yeah, no, it's not.
I don't think, I can't think so.
No.
No.
Nope. 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 All right, let's move on. Next up, Manhunt. Lwaxana Troi arrives on the Enterprise, intent on finding a husband, which is actually a synopsis for every one of her episodes, I think. So it's weird that that's kind of where it stops. But this is the one where she goes on the holodeck and stuff. Oh, this is the one where she goes through Betazoid menopause, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Though the name hardly.
Yeah.
Does it
so, you know, well, you know, for Philip, this is kind of one of those aging episodes that we don't really get to deal with a lot very often. So
I think this is an interesting episode. Now you all probably won't say that, but I mean, I think it's very interesting. You get Dixon Hill, who doesn't love that. You get some Beta Zed. Backstory about what Riker has to look forward to. You get the Antedians, right? Come on, Fleetwood Mac. Hello. but I mean, I do like the ending. I actually do like it's a little cutesy, but I do like the ending. With she's like, oh yeah, they're just gonna kill. By the way, didn't y'all know that? We protest. and so I'm voting yes. Y'all can do what you want.
The Dixon Hill stuff is good. I don't know. It's actually, to me, it's the most forgettable Lwaxana episode, you know? And as much as I wish I could forget Lwaxana and Alexander in a bath, I remember that before I remember this. And, you know, it's, I don't know.
I can't see it being essential. Yeah. I mean, we're going to see a lot more episodes of Lwaxana that are better, Half a Life and such.
Yeah, and we don't learn anything here that's, you know, anything essential that we need to know, you know, further on down the road.
Now, this is the episode, because I know y'all, I think one of y'all argued with me before, this episode establishes Lwaxana as an ambassador.
Yeah, but she says it every other time she's on screen. <Right.
laughs> Well, because we got rid of her. Now, here's the thing. Didn't we get rid of her first episode? So this is her first episode. So now you're getting rid of this one, too? When are we ever going to meet Lwaxana, guys?
What was her other first one?
You got rid of Haven.
I'm double checking. Yeah, we don't have Haven. So if we get rid of this one,
we haven't
not
even
yet
met Lwaxana yet. Then
all right. We'll keep it for that. We'll keep it for that reason. I will
wait.
Vote
so
yes
you to... want Manhunt to be the introduction to Lwaxana?
It's
well, there's no running gag now, so you're getting rid of every running gag she's ever had of making a pass at Picard. So like, what's the first one you're going to have her for?
Well, if we have
Menage
this one,
Troi.
Menage yes. Troi, absolutely, that's a great episode.
So are we keeping it or not?
I'll say keep it for that reason. Since we did discard
it, it does help introduce her character.
Yeah,
and,
we'll keep it.
And because of like the end where she is helpful, like it does balance a bit, so it's not like, oh my gosh, this crazy character, like what is going on?
All right. We're
okay.
I'm a bit worried about the next one for Daniel, because I think he might play a long game here.
Next up is Emissary. On the edge of explored space, a new crew takes command of an abandoned space station and makes an incredible discovery that will change the galaxy.
That sounds amazing, Daniel. We gotta keep that. I'm sure the Enterprise is in it, so.
Yeah, but I don't really think you really learned a lot with the Enterprise. We can lose it.
No, but the thing is, the Enterprise is in it, But it's all blurry and stuff. I don't know what's going on.
Oh man. Well, because you're viewing it through the Badlands. Yeah. So, you know.
We kid because we care. Anyways, that was just obviously a joke, but we're talking about the TNG episode, the Emissary, where the Enterprise crew has to deal with a Klingon sleeper ship whose occupants don't know the Federations and Klingons are at
Susie
peace.
Plaxton.
Susie Plaxton.
Right. Yes. So I assume Daniel's going to say no, because if there's no Kalar, there's never an Alexander. I know where he's going.
I know. But they didn't have to go there with this, but they did.
Oh, they went there. Skeletor
the thing
and all.
Is, I love Susie. I love Kalar so much. She's one of my favorite characters ever. And Alexander is literally one of my least favorite characters ever. So I just,
we can't not cut all the Kalar episodes. It's essential
for sure.
Don't give me any of that Klingon nonsense.
It obviously sets up. Come on now. Like, let's think about how pivotal this episode is. It sets up Worf and Alexander and Kalar. All that stuff is super important, obviously. But more importantly, it sets up Worf going in and killing a guy to let Gowron become the High Chancellor of the Klingon Empire, which has literally ramifications. Yeah, and so I mean, this episode, obviously, I mean, how would you drop this episode? And it's a great episode, you know, to boot. Peak performance with the Borg threat in mind. Oh, yeah, that is. Yeah, okay. With the Borg threat in mind, Starfleet stages a war game simulation, pitting Captain Picard and the Enterprise against Commander Riker and the B-Team. What do we think, guys?
Hold on, does that actually say that?
No.
The B-Team.
So it's a little, like, slower.
Wesley Sheeting. Worf is upset.
I love this episode.
Yeah.
No, this is actually very essential. Well, I don't say very essential, but it is essential. I mean, Picard versus Riker is always great, just as a concept. And I mean, the Ferengi part, you know, But then the little Data ending.
It could almost be any antagonist, but yeah.
And I mean, we get to actually see the Picard maneuver in this one, do we or no?
Yeah. We do.
Ish. No. Yeah, I mean...
And Data has to come up with a defense for it at the last second.
Yeah. And then the whole Kohlrami thing. Yeah, I mean, this is good stuff. This is really... This is one of my favorites from season two. I love this episode.
Yeah. No, it's good really stuff. Good. Definitely keep it.
Keeping it.
And that's it. We're done.
Yeah.
Great season two. I mean, you know what, guys, though?
Okay.
I feel like let's look back at season two.
We just did that.
Moving on now very famously to what some may say is the worst episode of all of Star Trek. And to them, I would say, you obviously haven't seen A Plate of Stepchildren. But this is the one where Commander Riker fights for his life in sick bay after he's infected by an alien parasite while on an away mission.
Which that part is actually a cool plot. Like, I always... What?
No, I said it's not bad. That part is
oh,
not bad.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a great part. But then what they do with it is...
Hey, guys. Remember the time terrible. Tasha died?
Remember
the time when Riker got seduced by the Irish girl?
We just talked about
that. Hey, guys.
Remember last week when...
So this is, of course, the result of a famous writer's strike in the late 80s, and it's a clip show, which is what TV did a lot, and as a result of that, we had to deal with this, and I mean, come on. I mean, this is,
no,
again,
it
as
is
much,
not essential at all.
As much as, you know, the measure of a man is a yes, there's no reason in even discussing this.
If we were only watching a portion of this season, it would be confusing because literally more stuff could be in this than what we actually
saw. That's true.
Now, is there an argument for keeping this because of what it is? And by that, I mean, like, would you get rid of Threshold and Voyager?
No.
And you would never be like, oh, the Threshold, Voyager. But, like, Shades of Grey is sort of our little, like, Achilles heel. And of, like, you know, we hold that up. Like, if you lose that, then you're just never going to be like, oh yeah, Shades of Grey.
It's a product of its time, right? And it does represent a lot. for, you know, for what exactly was going on with Star Trek at the time and all of this. So for people who are fans, for people like us, obviously, even though it's a kind of like a morbid curiosity, but no, it's definitely not essential. And if you are not familiar with TNG or you're just going through the important episodes, this is not on the list. This isn't even close to the list. This would be as far away from the list as possible.
I'm voting yes.
Yeah, and I vote no. There's,
yeah, it wouldn't even matter. It's definitely not going on there. So, guys, season two, if we round, we're at about 55%, which seems to be kind of right in line with what the previous shows here on the network have been doing. The 50s to 60s, mid 50s to 60s.
50th anniversary, sense. You know.
Yeah, yeah. So we leave, you know, what you leave behind is about half. So, any closing thoughts on season two? It fared slightly worse than season one by just a couple of percentage points. But do you think that is a product of maybe lesser shows plus Shades of Grey? Or do you think that's just because maybe season two not as good as season one?
Guys, I just see clear sailing from now on.
Yeah, that'll be... Season 3 should be fun. And you, our listeners can look out for that in the near future, I think. But believe it or not, Season 2 Essential, The Next Generation, is not the only thing we're talking about here on Trek FM. So here's a look at what else you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
You know, Star Trek All Access gives you a great acronym, though.
Star!
Star, yeah.
Yes.
Star!
Yeah, the upward angle on the... Yeah, totally get it.
The orb.
I don't know if obsessive love is really love, because it's... I think it's more about possession. Yeah, and for Dukat, she's a possession of his, not really... a relationship of his.
The 602 Club.
But yeah, Evan Peters has way too much fun with this character. I mean, he's really embracing it, and just always brings a smile to my face when I see him.
Saturday Morning Trek.
The 30 seconds that we spent on Scotty singing probably could have been used with a really fun... why are all these women in security uniforms standing around us?
Rather than just, you're more handsome than ever.
Yeah, that, what was that about?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
You can listen to every show on the network at Trek.fm with links for iTunes, streaming services, and a direct download link. This week of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com. This is a great way for you to read all of the books you want to read but never have time for. Audible is always expanding with over 150,000 titles to choose from. There are classics, current bestsellers, and famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive and Federation. Audible has something for everyone. Now, as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to try out Audible yourself. So give it a try today. Catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read. To support Trek FM, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm. Thank you, Audible, for supporting Earl Grey and Trek FM. If you are a weekly listener and would like to directly help Earl Grey, please consider becoming a patron of Trek FM. At patreon.com/trekfm, you can choose a pledge level and receive rewards for becoming a Trek FM patron. You'll be inside the observation lounge of our network, able to participate in our monthly patron roundtable podcasts, and supporting the production of all of our great content. We would like to take this moment to thank our current patron associate producers, Stephen Boyd and Ron Sarna. Thank you for supporting Earl Grey. Connect with other Trek FM listeners on our Facebook discussion group called The Babel Conference, found through the Facebook search field, or like the facebook.com/trekfm page for show updates and announcements. The network is also on Twitter, @TrekFM. All right, Darren, if people want to get a hold of your Amazon link for pain sticks, how would they get a hold of you?
They can find me on Twitter under username Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi.
And Philip, if people wanted to get a hold of the real whiskey, I think you could help them with that. How would they get a hold of you?
They can find me on Twitter. My handle is NC Public Servant. That's NC for no clones.
We know what Philip's bringing to Star Trek Las Vegas. Something green.
And if people wanted to talk to me about peak performance and if I was be a part of the A team or the B team, they can find me on Twitter at OneUpDan. That's the number one, not the word. Gentlemen, it's been fun talking season two, but, you know, let's get to season three fast.
Let's get these collars on.
That's my favorite one.
collar, pip, pip, pip.
Yeah, let's get these collars. We will catch you all next time on Earl Grey. Engage.
Make it so.
Live long and prosper.
Fire.